Episode 7 of Season 4, The Bad Apples. My name's Klaatu. This is my show about Linux, and today I'm going to be talking about OpenSolaris. I'm going to be talking about Mepis, PC Linux OS, and ThinWalk, and then I'll talk about OpenOffice, KOffice, and Scribus, or Scribus. So, let's start the show. First on the list, OpenSolaris. OpenSolaris is, of course, by Sun Microsystems, or I should say the group that was formerly known as Sun Microsystems. I don't know what is going to happen with OpenSolaris now that Oracle bought Sun. I guess I don't really know what's going to happen to Sun now that Oracle bought Sun. Point is, OpenSolaris exists. It's an open version of the Solaris operating system, which, you know, I mean, that's cool, I guess. I never really understood, I guess, the reason for its existence. As a fairly simple, just kind of everyday user, I don't really know all the different needs of what people doing big, you know, server farms and things like that really are, and this may be more of the audience that OpenSolaris is aimed towards, or maybe it's aimed at the people who are used to using Solaris on the server and then come home and want a system that they recognize, you know, something with all the Sun tools rather than the GNU tools. The way things are done in Sun or in Solaris, you know, are a little bit different. From what I understand, Solaris is a System 5 or a System V version of Unix. You know, it's literally bought the rights for the Unix code as of, I think it was System 5, release number 4. So it's a technically and very officially Unix. You know, it is Unix. So a lot of people might like and appreciate having Solaris on their desktop, I guess. Or it could just be that Solaris just thought, you know, we could get a lot of free code if we opened all this stuff up and let developers hack away on it, which is true, and it's a good idea. So anyway, the reason I tried it was because there were a lot of ISOs at Southeast Linux Fest. They had the disks there and in the bag, and somehow I came home with quite a few of them. Not really intentionally, I just ended up with them, and I just figured, you know, I should really throw this system on one of my computers. And I was going to reinstall Fedora on this laptop anyway, so in the interim between Fedora 10 32-bit and the Fedora 11 64-bit system, I figured, well, why not? I'll just install OpenSolaris on there. So I did that, and it's an interesting thing. I mean, it really is. It's I am not going to switch to OpenSolaris anytime soon, probably never, but it's definitely, I mean, it's a cool, you know, again, Unix operating system. I would say that, you know, if Linux exploded and went away tomorrow, then at least we would have OpenSolaris to fall back on, I guess. And certainly I would rather fall back on OpenSolaris before I tried to get back into something like Mac OS, and of course Windows is out, but you know, judging on the spectrum from something that is technically Unix-based like Mac OS and something that is just very Unix-y like, to me, Linux, OpenSolaris would be, you know, somewhere pretty high close to Linux. The advantages to it is, well, certainly that it is all Unix-based, and it's sort of the logic of it all makes sense, that the graphic environment is the X server, so you don't have anything going on, you know, it's not a weird situation where you know, there's that separation between your graphics and your code. It's all very, very direct, which I love, and it went well. I mean, I can say honestly that I enjoyed my week or week and a half with OpenSolaris. I had it on the computer that I typically use, you know, for my everyday computing, not my Triple E right now, but my MacBook. And I was, during the time of having it on there, I was writing some articles for a publication, and so I wrote some of those articles on the OpenSolaris laptop, or rather, I edited them, actually. Well, no, because I was writing 3 articles, got rehired for a 4th, so actually, that 4th article was, I believe, written on the OpenSolaris laptop on OpenOffice. So, yeah, I mean, it was working quite well. I have no complaints about it, except a couple of different things. First of all, the wireless kept going out sporadically. I cannot explain what exactly was going wrong with the wireless, or rather why it was going wrong. I can tell you that they did not have the traditional wireless tools that I was trying to use, but for whatever reason, my wireless just kept failing on me. It would just go off at the most inconvenient times. And this is a laptop that, like I've said, I mean, I used 32-bit Fedora 10 on this for almost half a year now, and I've never had any problem. So I know it's not the hardware, and right now I've got 64-bit Fedora 11 on there, and, you know, again, no problem. So the issue was completely OpenSolaris's issue, and I don't know, I mean, you would think that that would be something in the kernel itself, because the drivers are probably the same driver. Yeah, the driver is the same driver. It's that ATH9K driver, so that was the same. Whether I was doing stuff online or just trying to stay online just to have it available to me, it would die occasionally, and then it would not be able to sign back on until I really restarted. Although, to be fair, I probably could have messed around with it more, you know, taken the module out, reinsert the module, try to get it going again without the reboot. But you know how it is. I mean, especially when you're working on something, all you're trying to do is look up something on Wikipedia or go to the fedoraproject.org site to check on a feature, and you find out that your wireless can't get onto the network. I don't know, sometimes it is just easier, unfortunately, to restart, and it kicks in again and works. So it's probably some kind of kernel module kind of thing going on there. I just didn't really have the time or the patience to really investigate it fully. But that was an issue. So that was one issue that kind of got in the way of it being a completely pleasant experience. The other issue was the fact, and this isn't an issue as much as it is an issue, it's just that the repositories were very, very not well populated. They were also hard to find, like an extra sort of, you know, universe or multiverse kind of repository, an extras as opposed to the core. I could not find, like, a community repo is the term I'm trying to find, community repo. Couldn't find them to save my life. I finally found some random ones on a forum somewhere and just went ahead and used them because I didn't really have any personal data on the machine, didn't care if it got completely screwed. I just figured I'll go ahead and see what these are like. And they were a little bit, they were okay, but the repos could be a little bit beefier, I think, in order to really make OpenSolaris, I guess, what you would think of as a viable alternative. But, I mean, eventually, yeah, I mean, I got the repos set in place. I got some extra ones, found some software that I wanted to try out, tried it out, and the package management system seemed fine to me. It's called PKG. That's the command line, PKG install foobar. They have a graphical interface to that. It looks a little bit like PackageKit or Synaptic or any of those kinds of interfaces. It may have been Synaptics for all I know. And it worked really well, actually. It was very intuitive. I liked it a lot. I felt it was an alright little package manager. The weird thing was that after I installed, for instance, Fluxbox and XFCE, because I didn't want, and WindowMaker, actually, because I didn't want to have to use the GNOME desktop, but I installed those, and I logged back out, you know, went to GDM to try to log back in under a different desktop, and for some reason it didn't have those as options in GDM, so I don't know if they didn't install correctly, or if I needed to add something to my initRC or something. I don't know. Again, I didn't really have the time or patience to try it out, so this can't at all be considered a fair or a scientific review of OpenSolaris. I'm just really just kind of reporting on what did happen. So there was that. I will say for the OpenSolaris GNOME, it's one of the best GNOME experiences I've ever had. I'm not a big fan of GNOME. I mean, I'm a big fan of GNOME in that it is a free desktop. It works really well. People like it. You know, I mean, it's a great little project. It's cool. I don't like to use it if I don't have to myself. But this OpenSolaris version of it, I don't know what it was about it. I mean, it looked really nice. It had a really nice sort of, you know, they did, you know, the buttons and the little page scroll bars and the colors and all that. Very attractive, but it just felt smoother to me than like the Fedora GNOME or the Ubuntu GNOME. I don't know. I could have been in my imagination. I liked it though. I mean, I didn't love it, but I liked it. I really did. I thought they did an all right job with it. So, yeah, that was good. The package manager was fine. I'm trying to think of the other issue that I ended up having. Oh yeah, was compiling. Compiling was sort of a problem, and I've been doing a little bit of research on why that might have been, and from what I can tell, it's kind of one of those things where you actually do kind of have to, well, Unix has quote-unquote portable apps, right? Portable apps are only portable to a point, and at some level you have to start going into the code and actually modifying it and making it work for that individual specific system that you're trying to get it to run on. And so when I would try to compile some things, and I never did get a lot of the things that I wanted to compile. And again, I didn't spend as much time as I should have on it for a fair, like, proper review. So it's not, I could be completely wrong on all of this, but it seemed to be giving me a lot of problems. So I don't know, I was having a little bit of trouble getting things to really do what I wanted them to do on this system. Ultimately, what got me to sit down and actually erase the hard drive and put something else onto it were the wireless problems. Everything else, I think, if I'd really played around with it and gotten to learn the system, it would have been, I'm sure everything would have been fine. I would be surprised, very surprised if I don't know. It was a pleasant enough experience that I could have seen me maintaining an Open Solaris laptop. Realistically, I mean, how many laptops do you need? How many computers do you need running a different system? It just kind of depends on your setup. And right now, I've got a small place, a roommate. I can't have like 6 computers up and running each a different system. So there's just not that kind of flexibility in my setup right now. But at some point, I might play around with Open Solaris again. The cool thing about it was that I tried the first release of it, and it was really, I mean, I'm talking the first release of Open Solaris. Like, I got it back at scale, 6x, I think. It was, if I recall correctly, literally the first publicly available version of it. It was just really not impressive. It felt 5 years old, you know. I mean, it felt like just, I was very surprised, you know. I really expected something a lot slicker. This version, 2009.6, I think was the release date on this. Very, very nice. It has improved remarkably. It looks and feels more or less like a small distro of Linux, you know. I mean, the repositories aren't as full as they probably need to be to make things really easy and flexible and allow it to be used by a wide range of kinds of users. But in terms of the quality of the OS and the way that it felt and the way that it performed, I was pretty happy with it, to be honest. I kept it on for a week, and that's a long time when you're distro hopping. And, you know, it could have been longer if, number one, the wireless problems hadn't been there, and you know, number two, if that wasn't a computer that I really needed to get back into working, like, yeah, I needed to get it back to its normal working self. One weird thing that I did have problems with that I forgot to mention was the HAL policies. I don't know why, but I was trying to add some HAL policies, and they just would not take. I don't know if the format is different or something, because I was using HAL policies that I just carried over from Slackware and Fedora, so I figured I'd just plug them into the Sunbox, and wasn't happening. So I'm not clear on why that would have been either. And again, more research, I could have figured it out probably. Just didn't have the time or the patience for that kind of research. I would recommend Open Solaris to someone who has an extra computer who wants to just try out another Unix-based OS. It's nice. It ran well. It performed well. The only thing was that, you know, for me, it's not Linux, so that's a strike against it. And number two, it's not GNU. That's another strike against it. Or it's not as much GNU as Linux is. And 3, it just, yeah, it's a learning curve. There is a learning curve there. And partly, they have a lot of Sun tools that are just a little bit different. Their man pages are formatted a little bit differently. You know, just little things like that you'll notice. And so there will be a learning curve. And it's one of those really subtle learning curves where you're flying along in the GUI, or maybe you're flying along doing the sort of the normal kind of little Unix-y things, and then you'll hit a block. I don't really remember which commands I was trying that would be totally different. But yeah, it'll hit you right when you're not expecting it. But yeah, I mean, try it out. Open Solaris 2009.6, really neat release, a fun thing to try for a week or 2 weeks. And I don't know, you know, I think the developers are doing a good job on it, and whether it'll last over this Oracle thing or what, I don't know. What its purpose is, I still don't know. I don't get it. I don't understand really the reason, except as I assume it just must be for the people who are used to the Solaris way of doing things and want to run that on their desktop. But for me, I think I'll stick with Linux. I'm happy with Linux kernel. I'm happy with the GNU tools, so that's where I'll be. Happy with the quality of freedom related to the GNU Linux system as well. Not too clear on all the licensing issues of the Open Solaris stuff. So, but overall, it's a neat little release, and certainly if you're just into trying out the different Unix systems, here's a way to try out Sun's Unix and really get a taste of that. And like I say, on the spectrum of Unix and Unix-like systems, the Open Solaris one feels proper. Whereas something like, you know, OS X just feels so bastardized and so non-Unixy in its way of doing things, I really can't be bothered. So yeah, try it out if you want to. 2009.6 Open Solaris. I didn't really intend this particular episode to become like a distro roundup or anything like that, and it's, I don't really think of it that way. It just so happens that since Fedora 10, my time with Fedora 10 came to a close, because I was thinking, okay, well, I'm going to upgrade to Fedora 11. I didn't really mean to upgrade to Fedora 11, actually, but I was so attracted to the idea of going 64-bit at last, I thought, well, you know what, I'm going to go ahead and try Fedora 11 64-bit. So I was going to wipe Fedora 10 off the hard drive, because obviously I can't do an upgrade from, you know, 32-bit 10 to 64-11. So I was going to wipe that off the hard drive, and since there was that time of not having Fedora 10 on there, I figured, okay, well, I'll put Open Solaris on there. So I put Open Solaris on there. After a while, that got fairly frustrating because of the issues that I was having with it, although that's not to say, you know, again, that if I'd wanted to stick with it, I could have learned it. I'm just saying it's certainly no fault of Open Solaris, I'm sure. It's just the fact that I was busy and I had to get work done, so I, you know, now's not the time to learn Open Solaris. But it was fun to experience, like I say. Just don't want to come across negative or anything. I'm really just, Open Solaris is cool, just not for me right now. Or perhaps ever, depending on licensing stuff. But anyway, I'm trying not to get distracted. I needed some GNU Linux something to just so that I could continue my work, because I'd gotten a couple of different jobs and I really needed to get the jobs done. So you'd think that this was the worst time to try out new distributions, right? Well, I mean, I had my Triple E PC, so if it ever got too bad, I could have just opened that up and was using that. But I was, you know, everything was being managed well. I was meeting my deadlines and everything like that. And I thought, you know, something, just for kicks, here's this Linux Format magazine, and of course the latest Linux Format here in the States is like 1 month behind what the people in England have, so, and probably much of the other around the world. So this was the issue. It had 3 distros on the DVD that came with the magazine. There was there was Mepis, there was PC Linux OS, and there was ZenWalk. Now, really, I just wanted to try out ZenWalk, so I popped the disk in, and I was going to install ZenWalk, but then I saw that it was really going to be easy to try all 3 of them, so I went ahead and installed all 3 of them. So let's talk about Mepis first, I guess. No reason, just we'll talk about it first. Mepis is a Debian-based distribution. It was based originally, I think, on Debian Stable, then like maybe 2 years ago or a year and a half ago or something, they kind of started flirting with being Ubuntu-based. And then they decided to go away from being Ubuntu-based, and they became sort of a Debian stable with Debian and Ubuntu source code for packaging, I think, or something like that. It's sort of a hybrid, I guess, between Debian and Ubuntu, which seems a practical hybrid. Are they any good? Well, if you want Debian and you want KDE, and furthermore you don't want KDE 4, this could be the perfect distribution for you, because this is this comes with KDE by default. It happens to be KDE 3.5.10. Now, I've used 3.5 series. I loved it then. I love it less now. But it's a great desktop. And I have to say that when I first booted up Mepis, I looked at it and I thought, oh, cool, KDE 4. Because they give like a gradient to the kicker at the bottom. Silly as that may seem, you put a gradient on there and suddenly it looks like KDE 4. Until you start really using it, then you start to notice the difference. But, I mean, they do KDE 3.5 in such a way that it looks really attractive. It's not like one of those old, you know, KDE 3.5.1 or 2 screenshots where it's just a solid gray color or something. I mean, it looks really nice. They did a good job theming it and making it look really sleek, and it runs really nicely. I liked it. I really did. I thought it was a really well put together little system. It had all the right little apps, you know. It rather than doing the KOffice thing, which right now, you know, they're kind of in transition between KOffice 1 and KOffice 2 and stuff like that. So they just did the OpenOffice thing, and they've got a good set of icons down in the kicker and some icons on the desktop. I don't know, it all felt very natural is what I'm trying to get at. It looked natural, it was easy to use, it was intuitive, it felt pretty good. Debian doesn't really do a whole lot with KDE. I mean, there are the KDE packages in like Debian Unstable, or possibly testing, I forget which, but it's, you know, and I was running that on my Triple E for a while, the Debian plus the KDE 4 packages, and I loved it, it was great, but I prefer to have a distro that, you know, if you're going to run the distro, you might as well take advantage of the fact that, you know, that you like their default desktop, so that you know that when you get updates and stuff, your desktop is going to be upgraded along with everything else. So this is actually a really good option, I think, for people who want the Debian system plus the KDE desktop. This is a really good place to look for that. Now, as we were talking about on the last TIT radio, which is the Hacker Public Radio, TIT isn't TWIT, is what that stands for. It's the Hacker Public Radio Live series. Art V61 was talking about Antix, A-N-T-I-X, which is sort of a fast and lightweight version of Mepis. And it uses Fluxbox and or ISWM, I guess, for its desktop, and it looks pretty cool too. So a couple of different distributions have actually come out of the whole Mepis distribution. So it's kind of neat. I heard an interview a long time ago with the maintainer of Mepis, and I really thought, I think his name is Warren Woodford or something like that. I really thought he sounded like a cool guy, and it seems like he really knows what he's doing. Well, obviously, but I mean, you know, he sounded like a really intelligent guy. I was impressed, and that's when I started first really looking at Mepis at all. Yeah, I mean, I would say that you should definitely check it out if you're actually looking for Debian plus KDE, give this a shot. Yeah, I guess that's about it. I think this guy uses Mac a lot too, which is interesting to me because I don't know if he came from the Mac world or something. Not uses Mac, but he uses Mac hardware, because I remember either his screenshots or his hardware tests were with like a G5, and he's got a whole bunch of logos of penguins with the Next Cube on its stomach. So I don't know what his connection to that is, or whatever, but kind of interesting, just, I don't know, being a former Mac user myself, just kind of interested to know how people find Linux and Unix and stuff like that. Once again, Debian plus KDE 3.5.10, Mepis. Good little distro.
With a portable computer, I can check my appointments, work on a script, ship it via modem, even agonize over this whole budget. How good are these portable computers? This looks like a pretty small computer, but in fact, this is just the keyboard. And of course, it is now wrist portable. Now, I don't know whether this does anything very useful or not. In fact, that's my question about this whole subject of portables. Is this another case of technology in search of a purpose?
We have had faster processors, more memory, and so forth in the past. Now what we're looking for is trying to get all that speed and power into a smaller package.
If a desktop computer's home is a desk, where does the portable computer call home? In the case of a battery-powered lab computer, almost anywhere you can carry it will do. The secret to the expanding success of the traveling micro is its ability to record and provide information on the spot and transmit that data electronically. Up until now, the principal buyers of portables have been journalists.
So the next one I tried was actually another sort of hybrid PC Linux OS. And PC Linux OS, I'd kind of heard a lot about it for a while, I guess back more when I was first coming to Linux and probably keeping up more with different distros. But it seemed to always get really good reviews and people seemed to really like it. And I found the same thing. I found it was a really nice distro. I guess it was having some development issues, you know, just sort of like, I guess its future was kind of uncertain. But I did try it and it was really, really nice. And I've tried it before and, you know, it always installed really well on pretty much any system I tried to put it onto. I was always pleased with it. And this time was no different. This was the, 2009.1 edition. And they came out with their normal distribution, the normal ISO, as well as their usual as of maybe last year, Mini-Me installer, which is just kind of a pared down version of the OS that you can build up on for yourself. And I remember that was a big deal as well when it first came out. I think it was either last year or the year before, and people got really excited about, first of all, the fact that someone would think to call the installer Mini-Me, and then second of all, that you could make your own version of the OS, I guess. I've never done it before, but I think, if I recall correctly, it was kind of a respin or a remix aid for PC Linux OS, and then you could burn your own live CD or your own live USB image. Definitely keeping up with the times. The installation went really well. Booting up, everything worked right out of the box. Again, it's using KDE 3.5.10, so if you're just dying to get back to the 3.5 series, this is another option. What would be the difference between this and, for instance, Mepis? Well, rather than being Debian-based, this is Mandriva. What's the spin? What's the twist? Well, this is Mandriva with the apt package manager. So if you're looking for something that does the OS stuff, the base system stuff, more Red Hat style, and yet you're one of those people who thinks that apt is the only package manager tool out there, and it's the fastest and the best, then this distribution might be for you. Again, I don't really see much of a difference. I've used Yum, I've used apt, I've used PKG now, I've used URPMI. They all seem to do the same thing for me. But this one, Mandriva, can use apt with it, or actually it uses apt as its default package manager, and the base system itself is great. It works as expected. It does really great at the, you know, installation stage. It seems to really know what it's doing in terms of auto-detecting the hardware and installing the correct drivers. And in fact, one of the things that it does that kind of impressed me, and I don't know if this is something that actually every distribution does and just doesn't make as big of a deal about it, or if this is something truly unique to PC Linux OS. But one of the things they did is after you've run it a little bit on the as a live CD, click on install the hard drive, and it pops up with this little message that, okay, there are drivers available that you're not using, or I think there are drivers running that you're not using. Do you want me to trim those drivers out of your install so that you don't get these drivers installed onto your computer? So, I mean, obviously, if everything's working for you and you've tried everything that you need to have work and it all works for you, then probably those drivers are excess. And things that are either, you know, that were automatically loaded with every live CD, or something that it maybe auto-identified incorrectly, I don't know, but it gives you the option, and then I would have said yes, and I didn't see any kind of performance loss, and I imagine the installer was lighter for it, so that was kind of cool, that was pretty impressive, and I don't know, like I say, maybe every distribution's actually doing that anyway, but this one kind of lets you know about it, and lets you accept the trimming of the drivers, and then the installation. So if you're new to Linux, or if you're helping someone switch to Linux, and for some reason, you know, Ubuntu isn't playing nice with their machine, or you just don't want to go the Ubuntu route, but you want something that's simple, that's got a good community around it, and that's simple to use. They even have their own little PC Linux OS magazine, online magazine. So there is a pretty good community around this. This might, you know, don't forget about PC Linux OS. I think it, for some reason, it doesn't get quite the attention that it used to, or maybe it never really did, but or maybe it is, and I'm just not following the distros anymore because I've kind of settled into the ones that I guess I'm comfortable with. But yeah, it's out here, it's out there, PC Linux OS. It was a pleasure to use. It was easy to use. So yeah, I would check that out if you're looking around. And finally, there's ZenWalk, and this was actually the one that I wanted to install anyway. Like after I decided to get rid of OpenSolaris, and I needed something to get work done, but I didn't want to tackle, going the whole Fedora 11 64-bit thing yet, and really configuring my system forever. I figured, okay, I'll throw in this disk and put ZenWalk on there, because I've always been fascinated by ZenWalk, because I know that it's Slackware-based. It's a big appeal for me. I know that all the screenshots always looked really nice, you know, really cool looking art. It's got that dolphin logo. I like dolphins. Things like that. But, you know, I've never really used it that much. But this time I did. I installed it. And the installer, first of all, is basically a Slackware installer, but with a nice little frame buffer around it or whatever, so that it looks almost, it feels like you're in a graphic installer, even though everything you're doing is text-based, but they do it in such a way that it almost feels like a graphic installer. So I thought that was pretty clever. And it kind of cuts down the steps in the Slackware install. Like, the Slackware main menu installer has probably, I'm going to just guess, 12 menu items that you then go into, you know, one by one and kind of configure each one. This one has maybe 5. So you do all that, and then you install it, and then you do the partitioning and all the other good stuff, and then you, which is actually another difference, I believe, you do the partitioning within the ZenWalk installer if memory serves, whereas in Slackware, of course, you have to do the partitioning before you run the setup, so you do that before you actually do anything having to do with the installer. But so in ZenWalk, yeah, you do all that good stuff, and then you install it, and then you reboot, and after the reboot, or maybe even before the reboot, again, I don't quite remember the order of things, but the point is that it does have a text-based kind of walkthrough of setting up your initial user, which is something that Slackware does not have. After you log into Slackware, or after you install it, you reboot it, and you have to log in as root and then create your users, which, you know, I love, it's fine, but ZenWalk is making it a little bit more everyday computer user-friendly and kind of steps you through the user creation. The desktop is XFCE, so in a way, at a certain point, it just kind of feels like redundant. You know, you're like, well, why didn't I just install Slackware and set my XinitRC to XFCE and be done with it? Of course, the reason would be that ZenWalk does pre-configure some stuff for you, and ZenWalk has something called NetPKG, which is their own little package manager, which is quite nice, actually. Is it enough to make me personally switch from Slackware over to ZenWalk? No, not really, but it's still pretty nifty. It's got a nice little graphical user interface called XNetPKG, and it is still compatible with Slackware packages. .tgz. So, I mean, if you go to, you know, someone's Slack build page or something and find a tgz that you want to install, you can still use that on your ZenWalk. So that's pretty neat. I don't know what version of Slackware you're supposed to get for ZenWalk. Like, I don't know if is the current ZenWalk necessarily the same as 12.2 Slackware, or I'm not really sure. They also have a system configuration utility, which is pretty nice looking. It does stuff like setting system time, looking at your kernel modules that you're running, print setup, keyboard layout, stuff like that. I don't know enough about XFCE to know if that's something that XFCE just simply does not have, or if ZenWalk is just kind of making their own because they like the way they do it rather than the way XFCE does it. I don't know, but it's definitely good to have that kind of thing. And I guess it turns out there are a couple of different distributions based even on ZenWalk, like ZenCafe apparently is a distribution just for internet cafes and stuff like that. So all kinds of interesting things going on there, and it's really nice to use a Slackware-based system, or distro, I think, because it just feels good, it really does. If you're looking for a lightweight distro, don't forget that ZenWalk exists, because, I would use, if someone came up to me and said, hey, you want a Zubuntu or a ZenWalk, I would definitely go with ZenWalk. I mean, it's just, I like the way they do things, I like the Slackware base, I like the way that you can get in there and edit things manually, you know, all that other good stuff, and ZenWalk does not betray any of that. It's not like it's taking it and adding a whole bunch of weird sort of custom things onto it. It's still very true to its origin, I think, and it feels pretty good. Try it out if you want to, and definitely the installer is easier than the Slackware installer. Not that the Slackware installer is hard, but the ZenWalk one does cut down the steps, and it walks you through it a little bit more, and it's prettier, so you can try ZenWalk if you want to. You might like it. Well, that was a lot of distros, and I have to say that after that much distro hopping, I think it's time for a nice big cup of coffee. So go make yourself one, and we'll meet back here and go through some applications. Alright, so recently, again, mainly because I've been writing like a couple of articles for some places, I've been using some software that I haven't used that frequently before. And it's going to sound strange, but one of these applications is OpenOffice. And it sounds ridiculous to sit here and review OpenOffice because it's so ubiquitous. You know, I mean, it's OpenOffice. It's great. Everyone loves it. It's the best, right? Well, let me tell you that yes, it is great. Everyone should love it. It really is the best. I have no idea, no earthly clue what people expect when they come to an Office suite. I mean, I know abstractly that they expect Microsoft Office. In terms of what that means, down to the specifics, I really don't know, because I'm not that familiar with Office suites. I use them for really lightweight kind of stuff, if I even have to use them. If I don't have to use them, I prefer to just use Vim. So more often than not, I'm in Vim. If I have to use an Office suite, I'll usually fire up KOffice and just do whatever I need to there. If I didn't have KOffice, I would probably opt for AbbeyWord, which I used to use quite a lot as well. If not AbbeyWord, maybe something like KWrite or Kate. You know, some just basic little GUI word processor. Now, OpenOffice I was forced to use because one of the places that I was writing for, I sent them a plain text file, which is usually what these places want. I mean, if it's a magazine, they want just the plain text because they want their layout artists to do the layout. For whatever reason, they wanted OpenOffice.odt format with the screenshots that I had included with the article in the text, you know, like inline. Not inline, but in the document itself, with text wrap. And so I had to download OpenOffice, so I tried it out again for the very first time. It was 3.1, actually, or it might have been just 3.0, but it's one of those two. But I have to say, it was incredible. It blew me away. The functionality of this thing was phenomenal. I, not knowing that much about Office suites, right? Now, I know a lot about computers, and I've been using word processors probably ever since I started using computers. So, I mean, I'm not foreign to the idea. It's just I'm not foreign with the specifics. But so I open the thing up, and I know that I need it in two columns. Wouldn't you know, I find two-column options right away, like instantly, practically. It's just, I need a column, I go to I think it was document, and then down to columns or something like that. I mean, it was just so easy, and I made it into two columns, and I could even adjust the gutter between the two columns. Fantastic. It works like a charm. It just splits everything into the two columns for me. And then I decided, okay, now I need to make these headings, a different size, a different font size. The different styles, right there in a little drop-down menu. I make the headers, header one. I make everything else just default format. Suddenly the thing's looking like a real article. And now I'm putting in screenshots. It's so easy. You go to insert picture, and it inserts it. You right-click on it to text wrap, I think. You get all the different text wrapping options, including the distance from the text, the gutter around the picture. You right-click and you can add a caption, and that caption moves along with the picture, which apparently other Office suites don't know to do. It numbers the captions automatically for you and keeps track of the numbers, so that if you have a picture that was formerly figure 5 and now you need to move it above figure 2, all those numbers are changed for you automatically. It was a phenomenal experience. I really thought I was, when they told me, by the way, we need it in open office format, I really thought, wow, this is going to take me another day. It took me 10 minutes. I just took the plain text from Vim, from the document that I'd created in Vim, imported it into OpenOffice, formatted it. Literally, it took me, I think, maybe 15 minutes, and 5 of that was just kind of learning where all the menu options were. But aside from that, I mean, it just took me no time at all. I was thoroughly impressed. I have never had such a good experience with an Office suite. I have had to use Microsoft Office on at least the Mac version a number of times in the past. I've had to use Mac-based word processors from AppleWorks to something called ClarisWorks, which was basically AppleWorks by another name. The horrible iWork suite. Yes, they call it iWork. And even NeoOffice, which is basically OpenOffice ported over to Mac. Not basically, it is. It's OpenOffice ported over to the Mac. And, all that stuff has worked okay. And I've used OpenOffice 2.0 on the Mac as well. That's just pure OpenOffice. And all of it was all right, and it did what I needed it to do, and et cetera, et cetera. But just opening up OpenOffice 3 or 3.1, whichever it was just a fantastic experience. I was blown away. And this was both on OpenSolaris and on either Mepis or PC Linux OS. I forget which of the two I was in. And it just worked. It worked well. It worked fast. It was intuitive. It was stable. It just worked. It was quite an experience. So, and I know that there are specialized needs for every audience. So while I'm sitting here raving about it, other people are sitting there grumbling about how it doesn't have .NET macro support so that they can calculate the circumference of the pie chart to convert to a bar graph representation of the linear difference between the economical slope of the stock prices, whatever. So I understand that different people have different needs, and for some people, OpenOffice just isn't going to cut it because of, that little weird feature that you need that it just does not have right now. But certainly for, I guess, what I would be just like the average or below average Office suite user, OpenOffice was very pleased with it. It was one of those things where I needed to get something done fast, and it saved me a whole day of work. I anticipated spending a day on it, and I ended up spending no time at all. So that when an application swoops in and saves you in that way, you're kind of you have a certain allegiance to it from then on, and that's certainly what I'm feeling right now. OpenOffice, I've always respected it, I've always liked it, I've always thought it was a really cool project. It was one of those early free software projects that I'd heard about, along with Firefox and VLC, things like that. That's kind of one of those that you kind of flirt with before you switch over to Linux. So it's always been there, but now I've kind of got some testimonials, I guess, to just really attest that, yeah, this is a good application. It might be big, it might be quote-unquote bloated, I don't know, but it works. It works well, it's stable, it was fun to use even, it was a pleasure. So hats off to the OpenOffice.org developers. a office. Now again, I'm a below average office suite user. I don't use them if I don't have to. If I'm in an office suite, it's probably because either someone's asked me specifically for that format, or because I need to print out, you know, a resume with fancy formatting or something like that. And just because KOffice exists and is part of the KDE project, that's the one that I usually default to. So if I've got, you know, Fedora or Slackware and KDE 4 installed on a computer, if I've got an Office suite on there, that's the one I'm going to have. Now, very recently, they came out with KOffice 2, or actually, they came out with a release candidate for KOffice 2, and I decided to throw my hat in as a bug tester. So I went ahead and downloaded it, in spite of their warnings that it was not ready for use, you know, by anyone who didn't want to bug test it. Downloaded it, installed it, looks great, looks fantastic. Love Qt 4. I mean, the way that you can swap panels around and move things around and just customize your interface, really fantastic. Really slick, really smooth, very pretty. KOffice itself, not so slick, not so smooth, not so pretty yet. Obviously, this is a release, not even a release candidate, it was beta. And so I figured, well, I said I was going to bug test it, so I'm going to use it and I'm going to report any bugs that I encounter. And I've reported a couple of bugs. There was a bug where just in trying to open a .txt file crashed the whole thing. You know, I mean, it's just kind of those kinds of things. But these are the things that they need to know about, because if they're sitting there typing in, you know, an ODT or something, and they keep opening that ODT file and it works fine, well, as far as they can tell, the application's working perfectly. Or maybe they make a .txt file in KOffice and reopen it and it works fine. But the minute you go out to Vim and make a .txt file and then try to open it into KOffice, you have issues. That's a bug that they need to hear about. And that's really what I want to talk about, is the bug testing aspect of things. And I've done a Hacker Public Radio episode on bug testing. I've interviewed McKinsey from the Ubuntu project about, she's a bug triage over there. I interviewed her at Southeast Linux Fest about the bug process and stuff like that. And I just want to say, once again, bug reporting is important. If for any other reason, then justify it by the fact that you're not paying for the software. You didn't pay for any of the software. You might have paid with blood, sweat, and tears trying to get it installed in some cases. Or you might not have. You might have just been sitting there, you click on, yeah, you know, aptitude install this package, and voila, it happens like magic. You know, if that's the case, and if you ever find yourself with a week or a two-week period where you think you're going to just kind of be doing some really mundane computer tasks, and there's not a whole lot on your to-do list, how often does this happen? And there's a project out there that maybe just released a beta. Grab the beta and try it out. Give it a couple of different uses, you know, like really try to throw a couple of loops at it, you know, curveballs, whatever it would be called. Just give that a shot. And determine and promise yourself that if you encounter a bug, you will report it. So this means that you might want to make sure that you've got a Bugzilla account with that project, or whatever bug tracker they're using. You know, make sure that you have an account with their bug tracking system. Make sure that you've got fairly normal system that you're running it on top of. You know, I mean, if you've got a system where you've just been playing around with all kinds of things, you're really hacking it to bits and barely anything works anyway, and now you're going to try to bug test on it, okay, maybe that's not a fair trial. But otherwise, you know, if you've got your otherwise good system, runs smooth in every respect, and then you try this beta, you can report the bugs, and I think I know that it's really important to report bugs. There are so many potentials for bugs out there, and there are only so many developers, and no matter how rigorous they may feel they are being, some things just aren't going to occur to them. You know, some weird activity that you might think is an everyday activity, they would never think to do. So, give that a go. You know, and KOffice, I tried to write article. I did write an article in it, but then when it came to laying out the article, it was not going to work. It was not responsive enough. It wasn't stable enough. It definitely was not going to work. The text wrapping capabilities weren't robust enough. You know, all that other good stuff. So, you know, bugs and feature requests, that's the perfect time to report those kinds of things. You're trying to work on your, I don't know, term paper or something. As long as you're saving and saving often, work on it in this KOffice beta. See what happens when you try to create a table of contents or a complex outline, you know. I mean, maybe you'll find something that you think should definitely be there, and just isn't there. You can submit a feature request, or maybe you find something that is supposed to be there, but that just doesn't work as advertised, or as it should. File a bug report. Will bug reports slow you down? Yeah, they're going to slow you down. They're not going to enable you to get things done in 15 minutes. It's going to take you 30 minutes, because 10 minutes is going to be spent trying to figure out what you're doing wrong, and then 10 minutes is going to be spent figuring out, you know, okay, this is actually a bug, now I'm going to go report it, and doing the whole bug reporting process. But once you file one bug, if you've never filed one, you know, once you file one, it'll change your outlook on the whole process, because you're going to find that it's easier than you might think. You're going to find that the people dealing with bug reports are a lot nicer than you might expect. You know, they're eager to fix these bugs. But, you know, if you can really kind of prepare yourself and say, okay, this is a project I care about, I know they've got a beta release, I am going to install it and try it out, and I resolve to file a bug if I encounter it. Trust me, it's going to help the project, it's going to help you in the long run, and it also helps you become part of the project. File a bug on something, and you can now count yourself among the contributors of Linux. You're no longer just a user or a consumer. You are part of the group making the thing work. And that's one of the greatest powers, I think, of Linux, is that it is decimating the everyone is a consumer model. It's a new model of things. It's where everyone is creating the things that they are also all using. And that's really, really powerful stuff. User-created content, basically, or user-created tools, even. It's really cool. It's, I dare say, revolutionary. It's going to be a big deal if we continue to support that model. Because the more that we can do that, the less we're going to be toiling away at things that we'll never even use anyway, in exchange for other things that we sometimes use. Instead, we're all working at things that we enjoy, that we like, that we are interested in, and we actually use, and things get done, and it makes it all better. So, contribute, and if you can, you know, file that bug next time. Especially, like I say, if you've got the time and the inclination to be a bug reporter for a couple of weeks, go for it. I think you'll be pleased with the results. Now last but certainly not least, is a little application I like to call Scribus, or Scribus. I don't know how you say it, I'm going to say Scribus. But Scribus is the fairly, I would say, well-known, I mean, people have heard the name, it's a term that a lot of Linux users are familiar with. It is a page layout program. And, you know, you might think, well, big deal, you know, I mean, is page layout really so complex that you need, like, some kind of heavyweight application to do it? I mean, why not just use OpenOffice to lay out your garage sale flyer? Well, you're right, you know, in the sense that page layout can be done with some simple tools. You are correct. Now, to assume that all page layout can be done with simple tools, like OpenOffice or you know, Abby Word, basically anything that, you know, like any word processor, that's not quite the same. And I will tell you why. Well, obviously there's the whole CMYK support thing, right? You've heard about it, you've read about it, you don't understand it, but you kind of get that, okay, printers need CMYK for some reason, and, you know, certain applications don't support it, certain ones do. And I guess Linux needs to support it better or something like that. Well, the thing is that in order for you to be able to send it out to a printer with a true black for their color management, yeah, you need CMYK. And that's cyan, yellow, or cyan, magenta, and yellow, and black. This is a technicality. It can be converted later on. You know, it's not actually, like, that big of a deal. It is, but it isn't, especially if you're dealing with a printer who knows what they're doing. You can usually get around whether something supports CMYK or not, at least on the scale of activities that, you know, you or I would be doing things on. Now, if you're a big publishing house and you've got a whole workflow established, okay, well, Now you might really need a heavyweight application like Scribus. So Scribus is its layout in the style of like Quark Express or Adobe InDesign. These are highly specialized applications because for simple stuff, the everyday user is just going to default to OpenOffice. And now that I've seen what OpenOffice can do, I would even suggest that to a lot of people. But in terms of being able to do the really professional layout where you've got, well, one of the biggest things is the fact that you're going to be getting images in different resolutions. You're going to be getting JPEGs at 300 dpi, you're going to be getting PNGs at 600 dpi, TIFFs at, I don't know, 1200 dpi. You know, you're just going to be getting all kinds of different materials from different places. You are going to need to lay out things in certain order, like a reader spread versus a printer spread, things like that. That is the order of the pages. You know, like if you're doing a magazine and you're laying it out for the printer, well, actually, usually the printer does this for you, but, you know, you might need it, you know, rather than page 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, you might need 1, 6, 2, 5, 3, and 4 in that order so that it can actually be printed, you know, so that once you fold it over onto itself, it all appears in the correct order. So it depends on what page order you need or the ability to drag a page and move it around. You know, maybe you had it laid out one way and then you realize, well, this ad really should go between these two articles and this ad should go at the end, you know, and so on. This is the kind of flexibility and some of those small little features that you don't really think about, you know, when you're doing it in OpenOffice and everything's working, you're just like, hey, why does anyone need anything but OpenOffice? I mean, this works great for page layout. It's the times when you do need, when you realize that the printer can't use a reader spread and does need a printer spread. Suddenly in OpenOffice, you would literally have to redo everything, whereas in something like Scribus, you would simply reorder the pages into a different spread. The different resolutions of pictures, like I was saying, if you're going to do that in, OpenOffice, I don't know what it does. It might just scale everything down to 72 dpi, for all I know. I'm really not sure. But at least in Scribus, you've got the ability to bring in all kinds of different formats and all that different kinds of resolutions, and it's going to render those things at a low quality so that it moves quicker, you know, on your screen, but it's going to maintain the original DPI. And then once you print it out to PDF or PostScript or send it as a series of EPS documents to the printer or whatever, it's going to render those images into whatever resolution you require them to be rendered. So it's a very powerful program. And having done a little bit of work in Quark Express mainly, I'm fairly familiar with these kinds of applications. And at one point, Dave Yates had put out a call for a Scribus expert, and turns out he needed Southeast Linux Fest brochures or the program booklets that they give out at the festival. And this was about a 16-page booklet, I think. And I went ahead and did it for the Southeast Linux Fest, and I did it in Scribus. I was originally thinking, well, I'll just do it in like Inkscape or something, because my previous experience with Scribus hadn't been that great. I mean, I could see its worth and its value, but it seemed a little bit rough around the edges. But wow, once again, you know, coming back to an application after a while and looking at how it's developed, amazing. Scribus is something certainly equal to anything that Quark Express has to offer. I imagine it's probably equal to InDesign, Adobe InDesign, although, you know, the weird thing about all that whole Adobe family of applications is that they're integrated into each other in weird little ways, and people start getting used to it, and so then you put them in front of something like Quark Express or Scribus, and they're like, oh, where's my open in Photoshop button? This must not be as good. I'm going to say it's equal to that, but it's obviously going to be different. It is really, really close to Quark, though. I mean, it's really similar to that, and that's good, because really, that is, a lot of the professional industry still uses Quark Express. I'm pretty sure that if you put Scribus in front of the Quark Express user, they are not going to have much of a hard time figuring it out really, really quickly. I sat in front of it, and literally, there may as well not have been a difference. It was just that, it was that easy. I mean, I could have gone from a Mac using Quark Express right across the room to a Linux box running Scribus, and I would not have noticed the difference. it was just, I mean, yeah, I mean, the keyboard shortcuts are not the same, but Scribus takes advantage of right-clicking a lot more, at least than I recall, that Quark ever did. So definitely as, you know, you can get around the lack of the same keyboard shortcuts. And I'm sure you can probably set the keyboard shortcuts to be exactly the same. I didn't bother because the right-clicking was really working for me. So, but yeah, I mean, it's just, I cannot tell you how robust Scribus is. It is exactly what is needed in desktop publishing, professional level desktop publishing. It is exactly what you need. It is an extremely robust application. It was extremely stable, didn't crash on me ever, and I was juggling lots of different images from lots of different sources. I mean, I would get images from, you know, Google, from Red Hat, from SUSE, from Zenos, all the different sponsors of Southeast Linux Fest. I was getting advertisements from different sizes, different resolutions, different formats. Scribus didn't blink at any of them. It just imported them, I placed them, and it was a done deal. It was really, really nice. The printer that Dave Yates and the Southeast Linux people were using, the key to that, this sort of thing, is really communication with the company that you're using. So if you're planning any kind of thing where you're going to have to get something professionally printed, you want to talk to the printer well in advance and ask them, what do you need exactly? So I had Dave Yates ask what kind of spread they needed, what kind of bleed they needed, all this other stuff, and they told him, and he told me, and I did it, and we sent it to them, and he says that they didn't have to do anything. He said that the printer told him that very, very frequently in their industry they have to call up the client and say, okay, look, you did all the color wrong, or, you know, you did all this stuff wrong. You gotta do such and such and send it to us again. There were no such issues here. So I'm gonna give that credit to Scribus and say that their application is written well enough and professionally enough that it can integrate into the professional printing world that easily. So this is a big win for Linux, really, honestly. This is something that you want to definitely champion. This is something that, I mean, quite possibly, this is one of the few applications of one of those sort of typical user space applications. This might be one of the few, along with, like, Firefox and Firefox that might be actually just a direct, just, I mean, plug in Linux and turn this application on, and people will not be able to complain about any features that it lacks or any way that it's inferior to its proprietary counterpart. Even more so than, for instance, the GIMP, which, you know, still can't group layers or still has kind of a weird GIMPy, as it were, text tool. Scribus is just perfect in every sense, so I would be hard pressed to find anything wrong with it. And I think if you're ever in one of those heated arguments about is Linux really, you know, as good as its proprietary counterparts, Scribus would be one of them that you could pull out and say, look at that application is, because it really is. It's perfect. There's nothing that I can think of that it's not offering. It's just that good. So, big, big win for Linux. That is Scribus. Big, big win for Linux, Scribus. Use it. Learn it. Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. Well, that's about it for the show, I think. I've done all the clever commentary that I can possibly think of at the moment. So, yeah, I think that's about it. So, try out all the different projects that I've mentioned. Try the distributions if you find them of interest. And certainly let me know what you think if you do. My email is klaatu@linuxcranks.info. My website, or the website rather of this show, is thebadapples.info, and you can certainly always check in with the progress of my big Blender video editing idea at thebadapples.info/Blender, which I'm working on right now with a guy named Nick, who I met at Ohio Linux Fest and again at Southeast Linux Fest, and he's actually coded some stuff that actually works, and here I am trying to frantically read through the Visual Quick Start Guide on Python to try to catch up with him in some meager way. So, yeah, check in on that. it's something of interest to you. And otherwise, I will see you next week.
Focus.